Welcome to another episode of the Pure Property Podcast, where we talk about all things property and property investment. If you haven't tuned into an episode before, my name's Toby, director of Track Capital, a property investment company. I have Matt here with me today, who is our Hong Kong and UK team leader. We are also both landlords and investors ourselves. Now, it's, although you can't tell in here, it's very hot outside at the moment. You can see we're in summer attire. Yep. How are you handling the heat, Matt?
Yeah, it's been lovely. I think a little bit different for the UK is the thing that I think most of that has caught out literally everyone is the fact that it's humid. Mm. I think that's what's catching people out at the moment. Obviously, I think in the UK, when there's a bit of sun, we're loving it, but we're always moaning about it as well. So it's hay fever season as well. So just bear that in mind, which I know, I'll be honest, I've never had hay fever in my life. And for the first time this summer, I've got it. And
you're checking all the pollen count now, yeah, on the news and stuff.
Apparently it's really high at the moment. So I can see why. Lots of people. I've got some friends as well really struggling. I know one of the team that we have actually, someone in the team, Jake, shout out to him. I know he's had to lock himself in his bedroom, he said yesterday in the meeting, he said he can't be dealing with anything outside at the moment. It's affecting him.
Yeah, definitely can't complain about the weather. We always always moan in the UK when it's raining and stuff, and it is nice. I absolutely love it.
We love it.
Yeah,
the sunshine brings out positive vibes. I think everyone's in a good mood, and I think as a whole, the days are longer. So you feel as though, in terms of especially in the winter, sometimes it can be, a little bit kind of, it feels like the days are shorter. Mm. Getting up in the morning, first thing, and obviously I know you like going to the gym as well. It's tough in those times, whereas at the moment, up at 6 a.m.
makes
and it's
everything
nice
better.
And sunshine.
Makes everything better. So, yeah, that's good. So, yeah, Matt, why don't you talk about what we're going to going over today?
So today, guys, we've been asking yourselves, the viewers, to ask us some questions, just general kind of questions that you have within property, whether that be, I think, to be honest, most of the questions, to be fair, that we have received have been much more focused on from a landlord's perspective and a point of view. So, we're going to kind of go over some of the questions that you guys have asked and obviously let us know, obviously, if you want to ask any questions in the future, because we'll probably do something maybe in the future similar to this. But we'll kind of reel through some of the questions and we'll kind of get as many responses and answers and try and, kind of answer your questions that you've given us anyway so far.
Yeah, why don't you hit us off with the first question, Matt?
All right, so one of the questions coming in was, what are things that I should be looking at when doing viewings, and also what kind of questions should I be asking? I'm guessing they're referring that as well to kind of the agent that they're doing the viewing with. Do you want to start off with that one, Tobe, and see?
Yeah, I can do. I've done many viewings in my time. There is quite a lot, and it does depend how long you actually get on the viewing, because there's some, unfortunately, estate agents that don't like taking the most time on viewings and will try and rush you through. So do bear that in mind and don't feel forced on a viewing. I think that's one recommendation I make. But in terms of sort of what questions to ask, I would firstly be asking sort of your general questions about the house. Like if you don't know, try and find out how old the property is. You can usually tell by looking at most properties. So obviously Victorian properties are slightly different style, Georgian properties, etc., but some of the newer ones going on aren't the easiest to tell the difference between. So find out the age of the property, find out if there's been any issues picked up by the current owner of the property. Simple things like, when was the boiler last changed or serviced? General wear and tear questions like, do you know how old the roof is? Now, what I would say, general questions about the condition of the property, the wear and tear, are very important, like the electrics and looking at the sort of the wiring, seeing if that's old, because that can be quite costly. But do bear in mind that the agents, unfortunately, don't always know these answers on the viewing. So if they don't, just ask them to note them down, or just say, okay, I'll email you a list of questions for you then to follow up with the homeowner. Ask about the neighbours. Are the neighbours good? Is the street generally good? If you're looking for investment, what kind of people live in this area? Do you rent any properties out in this area? What's the demand like? How have prices been? There is a lot, but yeah, the main focal points that I would stress on is the condition of the property, sort of electric, heating, windows, roof. If you can find out the expensive stuff, has there been any problems with damp? Has it got a basement? Can I look in the basement? Can I look in the loft? Those sort of things, which can be quite costly later on down the line. Ask those questions. Ask general questions about the area. Ask how the market's been doing in the area. What kind of people are attracted to the area? What's the demographic like? If you don't know already, they're probably the main wings, main things I can think of.
To be honest, I'd add to that as well. I remember when I did viewing my the property I actually live in now. I'll be honest, with agents wise, not knowing absolutely everything, I remember we saw in for example the property I'm in now. It was we saw kind of like, it looked like a bit of a speaker, but we didn't know if it was an air vent. We didn't exactly know what it was, and he was adamant it was a speaker. Yeah. We then found out it was an air vent. So, absolutely, as I think you mentioned there, Toby, make sure for sure that, as I said, if they don't know it, because sometimes there will be, I mean, you've worked in a state agency yourself, you know a bit more about that. Sometimes there might be an agent that has done a lot of viewings on that specific property, but then for whatever reason, he can't make it that day. So someone stepped in for them where they might not have that knowledge. So as you mentioned there, Toby, I think that's a great point in terms of making sure they note that down and hopefully can get back to you with the relevant questions.
To go a step further, what you can do, you can knock on the neighbor's doors if you really do want to. I definitely recommend doing that if you're buying in a block of flats. You can knock on neighbors' doors, see what the type of people are there, what their thoughts are, what their experience is, and neighbors next door as well. It's nice looking area, and I mean, I know we're sort of going off topic here in terms of viewings, but if you want to actually get an idea of that area where the property is, pop into a local shop or a local business and just say, I'm just looking at this property here, what's the area like? And they'll usually be quite honest with you as well. So there's stuff you can do, but the one thing I don't think I mentioned is, obviously from an investor point of view, ask the agent showing you around, like, what are the rents in this area? Because you obviously want to, if you're doing your figures and your numbers, you want to know what it's going to rent out for, so you can work out your yield and returns.
Of course, no, absolutely.
Any horror stories on any viewings you've done?
I've been all right, to be honest. I'll be honest in this part. That's why I wanted to ask you this question, because you've done viewings from both, if you can, you could say, both sides of it. To be honest, you've done it from
one
end of the estate to the other side. So as a whole, I would say I've done viewings. I've done quite a few in the past, but as a whole, I wouldn't say any absolute horror stories. Of course, there's sometimes things that will be kind of hidden behind sofas, damp, for example, and things that initially from face value it might look good, but when for example I did a viewing on one of the properties I was looking at, and I remember they'd put over one of the bath panels, they'd put kind of just like a nice towel, so it looked great decoration wise. I didn't think to look under it. When I looked under it, it was massively damaged in that particular area, and that had to be obviously replaced straight away. Look, luckily it wasn't too expensive, but as a whole, with taking on that property in general, in the end, it's just something that you need to make sure you're looking into every little detail, sometimes looking behind where sometimes furniture is, because sometimes that can be a great place to hide and cover up things as well. The only other thing I was going to say, Toby, is obviously I know we kind of went over in more of a freehold or a house. What would you say in terms of questions to ask maybe an agent in regards to on a flat or an apartment, would you say
leasehold?
Something else?
Yes, so there are probably some questions that I'd ask. Firstly, what's the lease length? What's the service charge? If it's not a brand new build and hasn't got the new ground rent legislation, what's the ground rent? Does it double every 10 years or linked to inflation? What else would I ask? Has there been any major works done in the block? So if it's a block that's been operating for a few years, has there been any works done that are major works? Or are there any planned major works as well? Because if you're about to buy a leasehold property and the management company is budgeting and setting up for a new roof to be replaced, in the next couple of years, where actually you're going to be the one that's going to be paying for that, and you've only just taken the property on. Sure. What else would I ask? Are pets allowed? Are there any restrictions within the lease? They'd be the main ones that I'd be asking.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think that's a good point of view, to be fair, Toby, as you mentioned there, to look at it from both points of view, because of course, a lot of the time you will sometimes have a decision where you're looking at houses or apartments, and to know the questions and the right questions to ask. And I'd say that's similar to off plan, in terms of ask the agent. There's obviously going to be an agent on board for, even if you are purchasing off plan, ask them these questions as well. They should be able to obviously give you all the answers that you need.
Yeah, excellent. Right, next question we have then is, should I be purchasing in a limited company? Well, it says LTD, so I'm guessing it means limited company, or in my name? Why don't you start that one off, Matt?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think there's been a couple of changes, hasn't there, over the past couple of years as to, and a lot of talk, to be honest, as to, and we get it on a regular basis for sure, in regards to what is the best route to go down when purchasing property as an investment. Look, in terms of if you're going down the route of your personal name, I think it depends personally, I think, on your financial situation and obviously your own situation in particular, because in the UK, obviously, we know about the tax brackets and certain tax brackets that you will, obviously, as soon as you earn a certain amount, you will kind of enter the other tax bracket, which of course will lead you to be paying higher tax, which of course, the thing is, what has changed anyway is any income that you're making off your property, you will be, that will essentially be added to whatever you're making in a year. So it will be added to your salary. And essentially, if you're earning quite a high amount, you're going to be obviously taxed on that amount. And also, you've got to think, if you're buying in a limited company, I think it's around, is it 19% you get?
Yeah, it's corporation tax. Corporation tax. Just to add in there as well, the reason why it's going to bump you up over sort of thresholds potentially is because you can no longer deduct the mortgage cost off your income difference when it's in your personal name. So therefore, I always use the example, if you were earning £10,000 in rental income and then your mortgage cost was £5,000 before, you only had to declare £5,000
as on the gross, the income, right?
But yeah, exactly. Now it's on the gross side, so you actually have to declare the £10,000. That's where this can catch people out and bump them into higher tax brackets.
For sure. So yeah, I would say look into your personal situation. If you add the income to what you're earning and it isn't over the tax bracket, then realistically there probably wouldn't be too much of an issue, because obviously the tax bracket would be slightly lower. But once again, I'd say there's a couple of companies, isn't there, that we work with, for example, that can give you advice. You don't have to use them. I'll give them a little plug. Get Ground.
Yeah, we do have a previous podcast episode actually with Liam from Get Ground, yeah, where they discuss it. I mean, it's quite old, so they've probably changed a few bits and pieces. But yeah, excellent company.
Yeah, great to work with, and I personally will know that from referring clients and actually using them myself on my property. So as a whole, they can at least just give you advice and also kind of show you what are the benefits to buying in a limited company. So yeah, I would say, overall, look into your own personal situation, because of course, yeah, you don't really want to be getting hit on 40% or higher if you're obviously earning quite a lump sum. So yeah, there's ways around it, but we would say, yeah, speak to probably a professional in that sense.
Exactly, that would have been my first response to the question, is speak to an accountant.
Of course,
if you can, speak to a property specialist accountant. Because they will look at your personal circumstances and be able to advise as in a better way. What I would say is, I remember my accountant said to me when I asked him this question years ago, he's like, look, are you looking to build a portfolio? My answer was yes. He said, well, look, if you're looking to purchase multiple properties over the coming years, he said, I would just do it in a limited company. And that was based on my personal circumstances. But what he's pretty much saying is that if you're going to buy multiple, it's going to get to a stage where you're going to have a lot of income coming in. And what you have to remember, and this is why it is important, when you buy in your personal name, it's not just as simple as changing it from your personal name into a limited company. You can do it, but it's not easy and it is costly, because you have to actually go through the process of the new limited company purchasing the property from you. So you incur stamp duty, legal costs. You'd probably have to get a new mortgage as well if you've got a mortgage on it. So just do bear that in mind. And yeah, it can be quite costly as well if you're buying in a limited company. Oh, not costly, but there are costs involved when buying a limited company. So mortgage rates can sometimes be a little bit higher. There might be ad hoc fees. You will have to pay fees for your accounts to be done on a yearly basis, because obviously it's a limited company, so they have to be done on company's house. So there are some ad hoc costs that you do want to bear in mind, and that's why it's good to sit down with an accountant and go through these and weigh everything up for you. So just do bear that in mind. And look, the costs aren't massive for when you have a limited company, but what you can usually find is those costs massively outweigh the tax and income benefits of buying in a limited company compared to your personal name. But it's all down to your personal circumstances.
Yeah, I agree. All right, going into the next question. Obviously, they've said, what is your opinion? So what's our opinion, Toby, on if to furnish a property or leave it unfurnished? What would you say initially to that?
Good question. I think you probably want to have a question asked to your letting agent that you're going to be using if you are using a letting agent. But it depends on the property. So some properties are best to furnish because tenants won't furnish it and some aren't. So for example, a three-bedroom family home house, for example, realistically, the family is probably going to be bringing their own furniture along with them. So you wouldn't necessarily need to furnish that property. Whereas a one-bedroom flat that's maybe targeted to a young working professional, maybe just left home, they won't have furniture. So it's probably best to furnish that property because it's going to make it more attractive to that demographic. If you furnish a property where it's a family home and they don't need or want furniture, it'll be a waste because they'll be like, well, I actually don't need that. We've got our own furniture, and then you have to remove it. So depends on the property, but I would usually say the demographics where they're not going to have their own furniture, young working professionals, just left home, etc., don't need to furnish it. But where they, you do need to furnish it, or where they have their own furniture, usually like families, etc., then you wouldn't need to furnish that. Then I'd also be asking the letting agent, what's the uplift in rental price?
That's what I was going to ask you next.
Yeah, from furnishing the property, because
does it make a difference?
Yeah, how much am I going to get extra from furnishing the property? And if it is a lot more, then it is worth doing. And one thing you have to consider, and that's why it's important to ask these questions, is if you furnish a property and that furniture gets damaged and needs replacing, you have to replace it because you've put it in the property. So if the tenant accidentally breaks a chair, well, then you're going to have to replace that chair, whatever furniture may be. So then that's where it can become quite costly, and you just want to figure that out. Obviously, you can get contents insurance in your property, etc. But yeah, just that's what I would be considering.
And some products naturally will have warranties, etc. as well.
Yeah, of course.
But yeah, to be fair, Toby, I'd say a very similar thing. I think it depends on the property that you're looking to rent out as such. And I think, as you said, if the margin is there and there is a real difference in rental value in terms of an increase, then for sure it may be worth considering. But sometimes for the sake of looking at a £2,500-£3,000 kind of furniture package and fitting it all in, to maybe receive an extra £25-30 per calendar month, you probably want to weigh that up and think, is it really worth me forking out that in cash to get a very small return over a long amount of time? I mean, look, it might be worth it for some people, but as I said, I think, as you mentioned it, to be honest, I think it really does depend on the actual property itself.
What I would actually add in as advice, and it's something that I do with my letting agents, is I will have the property unfurnished, but I will make a note with the letting agent, say any viewing you do, or even put it in the advert, it's unfurnished, but it can come furnished. So that way, if the tenant goes, well, actually, look, I need furniture, then the letting agent say, that's fine. the landlord has said they're happy to furnish it, this is what the price will be should it be furnished. That way, you don't have to commit to paying out for the furniture up front. And if they don't want it, excellent. You haven't paid for the furniture, so that's fine. You haven't got to put it in storage or get rid. But if they do decide they want it, as long as you've got the furniture pack set up and ready, and letting agents usually have access to furniture packs and offerings, and then you can say, yep, no problem. Here's go ahead with that, and here's what the price will be. Get it all agreed. So, yeah, it just helps sort of limit that risk of buying furniture when you don't need it.
Some gems in there. Yeah. Absolutely. Great questions.
Right, next question. Is it worth using a management company to look after my property instead of managing it myself? And by management company, I'm assuming they mean a letting agent. Matt, you've been dealing with a letting agent recently.
Yeah, I would say, look, in terms of that, I think just as even before this, we kind of go into this question, a lot of people, I think, when looking into property in general, will always quite like the idea of it being near to them. And sometimes we'll be like, we've had it a lot with clients ourselves in terms of, look, I want to invest near me because potentially I can manage it and save whatever the management costs are. Mm. Look, in terms of that, it's something that you need to weigh up in terms of how much time you've got on your hands. I mean, the typical letting agent fee in the UK is roughly around 10%.
Yeah, average about 10%
of the property's rental income. So, look, obviously you need to weigh that up and see, obviously the location, if you're going to have the time to be able to do it. But if I'm honest, I've used letting agents all the time. I think for the hassle and what it's worth, and the level of kind of professionalism, and also the checks they go into as well. Of course, they're going to go into doing background checks on the tenant who's coming in. Making sure obviously they can afford the rent every month and that their fingers crossed isn't going to be any issues. Of course, sometimes it may be the case. Unfortunate, but obviously it's a very small margin of that will happen. But as a whole, I do think it's definitely worth getting. Whether even if it's a local one, I'll be completely honest. I think sometimes, I mean, we hear the horror stories of sometimes tenants doing this and that. And we know some tenants that are good as gold, they'll pay every month, but they may want to ask a question every couple of weeks or if every single thing's going wrong. And obviously, if you're managing that yourself, you're going to be the one having to consistently go back to them, answer their questions. And yeah, you just don't know sometimes who you're going to get in, do you? You can't exactly pick the exact tenant you want to go in there, and then they're going to be quiet, pay their rent, and they're going to be happy. So I think for what it's worth, look, I know sometimes people look at it from an investment point of view and think, look, that 10%, I can keep that rental income. But I personally think it's more hassle than it's worth. What do you think, Tobe?
Yeah, in short, I recommend using letting agents. I use letting agents, and I've spoken about this multiple times on this podcast over the years of doing it. Unless you are retired and have the interest in doing the property.
If you have the time in your hands, it's different,
If you've got the time and you're actually interested and don't mind the hassle, that's fine. If you're doing property full time and you want to save some costs and you're doing it day in and day out anyway, that's fine. But realistically, if you're neither of those, a letting agent are well worth their money.
Yeah, I would say majority of people, isn't it, Tobe? Like a lot of the time we deal with investors on a day-to-day basis. Obviously, you've been investing as well, but people have got jobs, they've got their lives, they've got families to obviously look after, and they've got, as I said, full-time jobs. They haven't got really time to be able to allocate that certain amount of time to also look after a tenant or kind of be there on hand whenever they need.
Also, it's not just the, obviously you mentioned about if tenants are speaking directly, they can hound you, bother you. It can get quite nasty as well, if that's the case as well. So that's one aspect of it. But for me, the main reason why letting agents justify their fee, and probably, I hope they don't hear me saying this, get more, is because it's the legislation that they look after for you to make sure that your property is being rented out and let out correctly. Because if something like that goes wrong, forget the 10% you've been paying, it can cost you thousands. Like you see in the news, landlords that are getting fined thousands of pounds for mismanaging their property, not up to correct standards. And that's the one thing the letting agent would do. I know someone personally that I've been helping out recently, trying to give some advice to. He got some tenants in because he didn't correctly put them in the property with the right paperwork and what was required, and keep them up to date with the right paperwork in line with legislation. He actually can't now evict them from the property. via the normal route. So yeah, he even went to a solicitor and said, I've got this problem. I'm being told I can't evict them. Solicitor said, have you got X, Y, and Z, like paperwork wise? He went, no. He went, no, you can't. Like, you can't just evict them from the property.
Wow.
So, and yeah, he was trying to sell the property. So he can't physically evict his tenants because he didn't follow the right procedures. And that's how important it is to make sure you're doing the correct legislation, the stuff around deposits when they move in, the right to rent checks, everything. There's so much
involved
which you don't know. And to be fair, if you were doing it on an ad hoc basis, to try and keep up with it all would be an absolute nightmare. So that's why a good letting agent is definitely worth the money.
Yeah, for sure. Going into the next question here, we've got, what percentage do I need to put down to secure a buy-to-let mortgage? And if I put down more, will I get access to better rates?
Yeah, good question. Again, not mortgage brokers. So I recommend speaking to a mortgage broker if you are actually seriously thinking about getting a mortgage. But the minimum, technically, that lenders will look at most of the time is 25% deposit, so a 75% loan to value. That said, there has been and there are some products that offer 20%. I don't really recommend it because I like not over leveraging, but I think 25% is a good comfortable level. So yeah, 25% I say is the average deposit level you would need to get a buy to let mortgage. If you put more in, do you get better rates? In some circumstances, yes. Some,
not always though, right?
Not always. It depends on the lender, of course. So this is why you need to speak to a broker and always go for one that's got access to the whole market. But yeah, usually because what the lender says is, well, actually our risk is going down, so we'll offer a slightly more favourable rate. So yeah, it just depends on the lender. So you can sometimes get access to better rates, and more products as well can open up to you because, look, from a lender's point of view, it's the risk profile they're looking at.
Well, we had it the other day, to be honest. When we looked into it, I think one of my clients, essentially he was looking to put down more but couldn't get access to a better rate. But what it allowed him to do was his monthly payments, of course, would then go down. So then he wasn't having to fork out maybe as much per month. So even though, yes, he didn't get access to better rates, he was putting down more. But of course, his profit margin in those months are going to be a little bit better because the amount is lower.
Yeah, yeah, of course. Yeah, so that's quite a simple one there. Next question. Do I need a level of insurance as a landlord? I'm assuming they're talking about landlord insurance, so insuring the property that they own. If you own a leasehold property in a block of flats, there is usually building insurance, which you need. Lenders will want to see that as well, by the way. If you're getting a mortgage and you're buying a house, they want to see building insurance. The building insurance is usually incorporated into the service charge. So again, that's another question to ask, maybe, like we mentioned before, on a viewing, if you're viewing leasehold. Then you have ad hoc insurances you can get. So you
this
can
is
get
like private insurance, right? So well, this is away from your standard, as you said, maybe within the service
so you
charge.
Need building insurance is obviously a must because if the building falls down, it covers you to rebuild it. So if you buy a house and it's freehold, you'd have to take care of that. If you're buying a leasehold in a block of apartments, then usually it's incorporating the service charge, but double check that. And then you've got other insurances which you can look at and factor in, totally dependent on your risk profile and how comfortable you feel with having these sort of peace of minds or whatever it is that makes you feel more comfortable and sleep at night. So you can have contents insurance. So like I mentioned, if you've got furnished flats or whatever's in the property, contents insurance, there's different levels, and you've got, so I think there's accident insurance in there as well. So if a tenant has an accident, you've been covered, legal coverings in there. And you've got other insurance products such as rental assurance you can get as an insurance product. So if your tenant stops paying the rent, they will cover you and keep the rent coming in. So yeah, they're the different insurances. So it's up to you what you need. You always need building insurance, especially if you've got a lender. If you're a cash borrower, it's not as important, but I'd recommend it. But building insurance is there. I personally only have building insurance for myself, and just I look at the different levels of it, and I get sort of like a medium tier level. I've never been one to get sort of content insurance. It's not something that, to be fair, when I've worked out and looked at the price and the potential payouts and pitfalls. It's not really been one that I would personally stress over. But if you want peace of mind with those insurances, then if it helps,
as you said
better.
There, Toby, I think it depends to what level of insurance you want.
Yeah.
Of course, you can get loads of things covered.
Yeah.
But of course, it's going to come with a cost as well. So you will end up paying a higher insurance. So it depends. I guess if what you're wanting to get in terms of with the insurance, etc.
Yeah.
Just going to the next one here. We've got, in today's market, what number, or I'm obviously guessing, they're talking about more so a little bit of ROI and yield here, but they said, what number would you say is a profitable ROI and yield? Obviously, they are two different things. Do you want to maybe list kind of what they are and then go into potentially what are rough figures that we could be working with that are profitable?
Yeah, so yield is used as a calculation to work out the rental income in comparison to the property value. So that's how you work out the yield. So the yield is kind of a basic calculation we use when assessing multiple properties, for example.
Been used for years as well, isn't it? It's more the standard.
Yeah, straightforward. And I tend to use it in the first instance. If I'm looking at 10 properties, I'll work out the yield in each property and then I can whittle it down to where they're the highest yielding ones. So I'll focus on those ones. And yield, if you don't know, is calculated by dividing the yearly income by the property value. So that's the yield. So like the monthly income compared to the property price. Return on investment is what it is. It's your return on what you have invested. So that would be so higher if you're buying with a mortgage because you're investing less than the property value.
Yeah.
So if it's $100,000 property and you put in 25% in $25,000, well, yield would be the rental income divided by the property price. Return on investment would be, in simple form anyway, your deposit level you put in divided
what you've put in and what you're getting out, basically.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, the rented income divided by what you've put in, so it's going to be a lot higher. Yield, I would say, as a basic calculation, I wouldn't be considering anything under 6% yield as a basis, unless it was an area of high capital growth potential where I knew it was going to grow aggressively, and that was my main focus was capital growth. I may take a slightly hit and consider slightly lower, but if you're looking profitable wise, 6% is probably a starting point. I wouldn't consider anything, me personally, lower than that. And then ROI just depends. I wouldn't say there's an exact figure.
We don't really talk about it like that, do we?
No, because it depends on the property, depends on how much you're putting in. There's so many sort of variables in there which you would have to assess. I wouldn't say there's like a right, I want a minimum, but what I would usually say is I try and aim for double figures as a minimum, so no less than 10% ROI. Or another way to look at it is make sure you're beating the bank. So if your ROI is beating what you could be getting interest wise in the bank, that's obviously a good investment potentially.
Sure.
Yeah, that would be my response.
Yeah, interesting. Now, as you said as well, like, these are all things that are great, but these don't really factor in your capital growth, do they, at all? So they're things that you've also got to think about in terms of with capital growth. That's another element. And as Toby said there, maybe consider maybe areas where, yes, you've got the good rental yield, but also there is maybe a regeneration being put into that location, or money being a lot of money spent in that area. So naturally, it should kind of raise up in terms of both, hopefully, rental and capital growth as well, in terms of property values going up.
Yeah. Last question then for this episode. I have brought I have bought a studio apartment, and the size is 320 square feet, and I'm having problems with the lending. Is that just down to the market conditions? Do you want to start?
Yeah, so I think, look, once again, mortgage-wise, speak to a professional in terms of brokers, etc. But what we would say anyway, basing off of, I mean, we deal with properties and apartments on a day-to-day basis, so we know kind of roughly the size, etc., what you're going to be looking. And when speaking to brokers, I would say, in general, we normally do say anything below 350 square feet as a whole, or 30 kind of square meters, is around the range that, if anything is below that, it's not to say that you can't get lending. It's just to say that I'm guessing, when speaking to brokers, once again, in terms of the professional side, definitely dealing with them. But from our experience and me personally, is if you're going to be going into that, you're going to be very limited to as to what lenders and what kind of products are out there. Because at the end of the day, yeah, it's very small. And we do know certain sizes are kind of classed as not mortgageable. Mm. And we know, for example, with dealing with developments ourselves, some of these kind of anything kind of smaller than 350, a lot of the time developers that we deal with will class it as, look, these are for cash buyers only.
Yeah.
And there's a reason for that, because they know there'll be a problem with mortgages. So I would say, look, if you are speaking or you buy a property that's a little bit smaller than that, just make sure you do your DD in the background and the agent as well. Maybe get a bit of confirmation that you can definitely get a mortgage product or something that you know is giving you a bit of assurance as such. I mean, what would you say on that point?
Yeah, exactly that. Speak to a broker. Look, like you mentioned, under a certain size, like 30 square meters, lending becomes very restricted and you'll probably be paying a bit more for that lending as well.
Rates so just higher.
Exactly that. So it's not impossible, but it's difficult. So if you are, it sounds like this person's going through that at the moment, look, rest assured there will be lending out there. It may not be the rates that you want, but look, it is there. If you can pull out of the deal now, then maybe if you look at the lending, it's like, look, it's not good enough, you can pull out, then maybe do that. But that's for you and your broker to look at and discuss. Obviously speak to a broker, see what they can get access to, but there is specialist lending out there. Then what I would say is for anybody out there looking at these properties, if you find a property and you think, look at the size of that, it's quite small, I don't know, would I be able to get lending? Look, speak to a broker prior to moving forward with anything. So just say to the broker, I'm looking at this property, this is the size, this is the development, what lenders would I have as an option to go with? And they'll be able to go, right, you can use X, Y, and Z, and this is roughly the sort of the rate you'll be paying.
Because they can't always confirm said, they'd give at least a good indication as to what's out there and what they normally, or in the current market, what's out there and what they'd be looking at. But I think it mentioned as well, in the current market conditions, is it because of that? We wouldn't say that, would we, at all? I'd say we've known 30 square meters has been around since...
Yeah, that's always been the scenario. It's not down to the market conditions. You may say the market conditions may restrict some lenders even more, but what you tend to find is the actual niche lenders don't really change in the market conditions because they're used to lending on high risk situations anyway. Yeah. So just a market change.
Standard.
They're still there. They might change their rates slightly, but they'll still be there. But so it's not down to the market conditions. But hopefully they can get that problem sorted if it is an issue, and they'll be able to purchase, or might have to look at pulling out.
For sure. Well, I think that's all the questions for today, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's all the questions. Feel free to keep sending questions in. We'll do another episode when we sort of collate a few questions, which we haven't had yet.
A few together, yeah.
Hopefully that's answered some of the questions that you as an investors have been asking or have had on your mind. And like we always say, feel free to drop us an email, info@trackcapital.co.uk. If you do have any questions, the team is always happy to help answer questions. Same here for me. You can find me on Instagram, toby.mancuso_property. If you have any questions, just reach out to me, send me a message, and I'm always happy to help. You'll probably be annoyed that I won't shut up once I start speaking about property.
Get you speaking on the topics.
I think people, they ask me a question, I'm like, right, and I just go off on one, and they're like, I wish I never asked this question now. Hopefully it's
Toby's
helpful.
Like AI, you ask him to write a bit of information, he gives you the full shebang.
Hopefully that's been helpful, and thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode. Bye bye.
Take care.